All of the remaining dates for the Golden Retriever of Comedy Tour are up. If you live in Boston, we added a 9 o'clock show. If you live in Philly, the tickets are there. We also got Durham, Raleigh, February 28th, Buffalo, New York. Me, Sean Murphy, Pete Ravello. What a fucking show. DanSoder.com for tickets. Thank you very much for watching the podcast. The most important is thank you for coming out to the shows. It's been so fucking fun.
Do I need an intro?
Should I do one myself? No, we don't do intros. That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying
maybe we should do one now. Maybe.
You want to try it?
Yeah, fuck it. Why not?
All right, let's try an intro.
It's been
ready?
A while. It's like
my next guest.
My first guest. Yeah, because
I gotta take this from you.
Because if it's my next guest, then I'm on second. Which what kind of a fucking loser am I?
Maybe the late night shows should die with idiots like me taking over. Maybe this is the point.
I don't think they are dying. They're just turning into this, and I'm okay with that.
You're okay with that? Because I'll say. By the way, let's work on the intro first.
All right.
You might have known him from his work, many stand-up specials, from the Late Late Show, and from one of my favorite all-time shows, the Drew Carey Show.
Drew Carey Show. Thank you for Craig saying Ferguson. So. A great show.
Criminal.
Unbelievable,
it's
right?
It's criminal.
It's not remembered the way it should be.
Let me tell you what it did.
Right.
It made me a huge fan of every single person on the cast.
Yeah, me too.
There wasn't a weak spot on that show.
No.
You and Mimi is in the office, and then the friends.
We're still pals, you know. Kathy and I still pals.
Really?
Still keep in
Kathy
touch.
Kathy is one of the best. And when you see
you should have her on this podcast.
I would love to have
her
on.
She is so funny.
Yeah.
She's like, she's the one of the best improvisers I've ever seen.
Why do you think the show doesn't get remembered as one of the greatest shows of all time? Because I would argue it's up there for me, and I mean this. You know, I base a show on how much I love it by how much I want to watch it when I'm sick.
Okay.
And I would say the Drew Carey Show is up there with Seinfeld for me
as a show
that I can put on and enjoy while being in a lot of pain.
Do you find that, and I found this with Seinfeld, that after all the Curb Your Enthusiasms, Seinfeld is even funnier.
Yeah, because you realize that it's Larry. Really realize Larry's George, I think watching Seinfeld the first time,
you just go,
George isn't a real guy.
Right.
But then Curb is the proof that Larry lives as George.
He exists.
That George is Larry.
One of the greatest regrets of my life, I was asked to do Curb, and for some reason I couldn't do it.
Really?
Yeah. And I've no idea what the part was, because it was like I just wasn't available. But they said, will you do Curb? And I was like, I can't. I'm not in town. I couldn't do it.
When you guys were doing the Drew Carey Show at ABC, who else was on the lots making stuff?
ER.
Crazy. With Clooney?
With Clooney, who used to play basketball every day, and he would come by and pretend that he didn't smoke, so he would not smoke with Ryan Stiles at Ryan's trailer.
Ryan Stiles, again, the Drew Carey Show.
A giant of the improvisation. Diedrich Bader. One of the best actors in America,
by the way. Funniest. He has...
The pants in Napoleon Dynamite.
And number two...
Veep.
I was going to say Office Space.
Office Space, he goes, I
believe if you say something like that, you get your ass kicked. It's one of the greatest lines of all time.
Yeah.
Does anyone ever say you got a case in the Mondays? He goes, I believe you say that, you get your ass kicked. It's one of the funniest.
He's a great comedy actor. He's a great actor. And they're all like really cool.
You were the complete sitcom. The Drew Carey Show was the complete sitcom.
Yeah.
You had Drew carrying it. So funny.
Yeah. You know, do you remember Ian Gomez in that show? He played Larry.
Yes.
One of my favorite fucking lines in that, ever in show business.
Didn't him and Drew hate each other?
They hated each other. And they were real rivals. And there was an episode where it was a kind of race episode. Drew had to get to the top of the Winfred Lauder building by noon in order to get his promotion. And he goes through all the adventures and it's all hard and all that kind of stuff. And he gets in the elevator to go up. He's just going to make it. And Larry's in the elevator. And it's one of the greatest lines ever in show business. The elevator's door closed and he says, well, Drew, you made it. Even all the gods with their so-called power couldn't stop you now.
I love that.
And of course, the elevator, like, boy.
I always thought Larry was taken off a character from a Drew Carey book called Dirty Jokes and Beer.
I don't think so, because Dirty Jokes and Beer, he wrote when we were doing the show. I remember that book coming out. So
that was a book that...
It's a great book, actually.
I read that in high school, and I read it.
Fuck,
and I loved it so much because... I was like, realizing I wanted to do comedy.
Yeah.
You know, I was the funny kid in school. Mm-hmm. My friends would come over to my house and smoke pot, and I'd make them
your
laugh.
Your friends still come over to your house and smoke pot. I will not be smoking pot with you today. Do you smoke pot in this house?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. I thought I could smell it.
It's right over there.
Yeah, I know. Don't.
Just look at the corner. You just got to look at the corner and go.
Yeah, you're right.
Let's hope that's the only drug you're doing here.
Oh, my God. It's kind of weird. It's a funny thing for me, pot, because even when I was drinking, I didn't really smoke pot.
Really? I smoked pot the entire time I drank. So when I quit drinking, pot stayed. Pot was like, I need you to come back to me.
Yeah.
Well, how long has it been since you quit drinking?
In next week, it'll be 34 years.
Whoa.
It was fucking crazy.
How did your family of Scotsmen react to that?
Well, most of them were reasonably supportive. There were one or two people that will remain nameless who said, we've all got drinking problems, Craig. Some of us just fucking muscle through it, son. That's a way to look at it, yeah. I suppose. That's a vibe.
When I first, when I quit, my mom's reaction to it, she makes her own Baileys every Christmas with a lot of Jameson.
Wow.
And I went home for Christmas, and she went, I made some Baileys, and I went, I quit drinking. And my mom, I swear to God, took a beat and went, forever? Like that, and it's like, well, it was a problem.
Now I know you're a real proper dyed-in-the-wool comedian, because you've got to have a very specific mom.
Yeah.
You know, it was like, I was driving down the street in LA, and my wife was with me, and it was, remember the Sacha Baron Cohen movie where he was wearing the mankini?
Yes, the lime green mankini.
You're right. Yeah, there's a billboard for that, and we were driving by, and my wife looked up, and she went, his mother must be fucking awful.
To be able to put a bikini on and then
it's like, that's a fucking comedian right there.
You know what my mom said that truly unlocked it for me one time is I had a really horrible taping for a TV set that ended up not being aired. And I had a joke about it.
I wish that had never happened to me.
Yeah. Mm. And then I was like, I had a joke about her dating, and I called her and I was like, is it all right I'm doing this? And she was like, I put you through it. If you can make a joke about it, I'm fine with
it. That's kind of evolved, I think. Yeah, that's pretty cool. Yeah.
It was a cool... You know what it did is it made me go like, oh, your support was actually genuine. That like, oh, that's great. Because I know other people that have talked to their family about jokes and they're like, you have to edit that. You need to take that out. Have you bumped into that?
Well, a little bit. At the beginning. I mean, no, I don't think they even fucking pay attention to what I'm doing. But they're just like, all right. Craig's on the telly in America again. Yeah. He's fucking great. Well, he's no great. He's shite.
They're like, who's coming on the Late Late Show? Yeah. You know, that stopped in 2014.
Yeah, that's a fuck. People still come up to me and go, I saw your show last night. I'm like, I stopped doing it 12 years ago. What you said was you were on Tickety Talk. You were on the Tickety.
You saw an old clip.
Yeah, you saw an old clip.
Was that, what show was more of a hangover to leave? Was Drew Carey obviously you're much more involved with the Late Late Show.
Yeah.
But the Drew Carey show, I assume you hit a schedule.
Yeah, and that was kind of like a family thing as well. Yeah. There was a vibe to it. And you know, I mean, like Kathy and I are still friends. Drew and I are still friends. And it was a kind of a group of us, and so it was kind of tough, but I was drifting out of that show. Mm-hmm. Towards the last couple of seasons, I'd started writing these movies.
Sure.
And the movies were getting made, so I was kind of like disappearing, and I had to, and they were great with it, but I was like, I kind of have to leave for, you know, 8 episodes, and they would be, okay.
Would they film you in blocks? Would they go, okay,
no,
if you're going
to
be gone for
it? It had to be like, oh, Mr. Wick's pregnant or something, and then it's like fucking, then I had to be gone. Because that was at the time Joe Walsh was on the show. Do you remember,
that?
Joe was on the show.
That makes so much sense. Because you know what I miss about the sitcom era? Was that you would find out these real world things would happen and you would go, oh, well, that explains why that character was gone in these shows.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It was like stuff goes. I thought that I was watching Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is a great show.
Great. One of the last great sitcoms.
An amazing show. And Chelsea Peretti disappears.
Yeah. And she went and had a baby.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah, I think.
Because I was trying to figure it out. I'm like, well, I don't know.
Yeah, her and Jordan Peele had a baby, and I think she left the show for a little bit and then came back. I could be wrong, but I think that time's up right.
Right.
So you were saying on the lot you had ER.
ER, we had Lewis and Lois and Clark, not Lewis and Clark, Lois and Clark.
Dean Cain and Terry Hatcher.
That's the one.
I remember it. Yeah. I loved it. Watched it weekly.
And there was a show called Friends.
Yeah. On the lot. Yeah. Oh, so you were on the lot when they were doing Friends?
Oh, yeah.
Was
yeah.
there like...
When we started on the Drew Carey show, they said we were the ugly friends.
That's so funny.
Isn't that fucked Which up? Shows like, it- you try fucking saying that now. It's like, ugly friends, huh? That's right.
Can I tell you, though? That is, for me, that was a bigger fan of the Drew Carey show than Friends.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, you know.
You guys are the ugly friends.
We were the ugly friends.
You know
friends.
Why? Because you guys are way fucking funnier.
We were pretty funny.
You guys were, when it that worked. Show is so I'm due for a rewatch.
It's pretty, there's parts of it. Did you see the Full Monty episode?
Yes, of course.
Oh my God. But the guys from the Full Monty were on the
yeah,
show?
Because that was a big thing. I think now celebrity is so like, it's all mixed together. It's yeah, all yeah. packed together and it's not. Back in the early 2000s, in the 90s and early 2000s, everything was so separated that when you got someone like the Full Monty,
yeah.
it was a big deal.
It was a big deal because everything now is kind of like, and I'm kind of okay with it a little bit because I think it demystifies it a bit when you do like a podcast in your house, but it's like a huge fucking show. I think there's something really awesome about that. I think
the celebrity used to almost be like a form of currency.
Yeah.
And I think now that's switched to authenticity because there's just...
Authenticity is a form of currency.
I think
yeah.
that's the new form
yeah,
of
currency. Yeah, I think you're right.
Like if you're being yourself, the fans
better.
Can realize. They know I'm sitting on a couch that I smoke pot and play video games. And you know what yeah. I mean? Like
I would endorse that as that's true.
Yeah. But I'm not in a... Some people come here and they go... Oh, I thought you were in a studio and you put a fake. I'm like, no, this is all stuff that like fans give me and I just put up in front of my books. Because it's like, yeah, I got an Anthony Bourdain candle. I bought that one.
That's very cool.
But there's stuff like, I think in the age of, there's too many celebrities now.
Well, I think,
now
that's you're famous. I think actually being famous is shit.
It is shit. All my friends that have become very famous are miserable in a way that I go, oh, that's...
Well, there was a time, like, you know, back in the day, like maybe in the 1920s when you were a silent movie star, being famous would be great. Like, you snort cocaine off little people.
You weren't even doing... But by the way, they were doing, like... Back then, they were doing cocaine for headaches.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like, they weren't even mad at you.
I have a terrible headache. Is there a little person around?
Yeah, get him over here.
Here's the thing, though.
Put the tray hat on.
But now we've kind of looked back on it, and now we think, wait a minute. It was good for the famous people, but how was it for the little people? Yeah. And I think, you know, if Charlie Chaplin was snorting cocaine off of my head, I'd be like, this is kind of fun. This is kind of anecdotal.
But that's how they also had secret families, because that energy translated to women going, you know that, Buster came through, Buster Keaton came through and did more than just let a house fall down. He busted in me.
Yeah.
And now I got a little kid.
Yeah. Buster nuts. Yeah.
He's busting nuts.
But I don't know if that happened. Can his estate sue you? He's been dead for a long time.
I don't think
right?
so. I'll just push a house on their estate.
And then they're standing in the window.
I go, it runs in the family.
It's crazy. It still works. It still works.
It's such a dangerous
thing. No way, buddy. That's AI. There's no way that's fucking true.
I know. Now people like Buster Keaton don't get the credit for pulling off a stunt. Because they go, that's AI.
You know, but that's the thing. You know, remember back in the day, there would be like Evel Knievel. Do you remember Evel Knievel?
I grew up with a stepdad that loved Evel Knievel.
Right, okay.
So we would watch him try. Yeah, I think that's what you say about Evel Knievel. He tried a lot.
You know, the thing about Evel Knievel is like one of the reasons I wanted to be an American was Evel Knievel. Because I was like, Jesus Christ, this guy's fucking nuts.
It is.
And he's great, and he just goes at it. And that's when...
He's like, you want to watch me jump this river?
And it was on the wide world of sports.
It was on the one of the four channels.
Yeah, and back then, getting fucked up and riding on a motorcycle was a sport.
It was great.
It was a sport. You could jump... I know a story about Evel Knievel.
I'd love to hear it.
Well, it's a little tricky.
Okay.
But so I'm going to disguise who it's coming from a little bit because there's still people around. But this is a story about Evel Knievel. Like, he's doing a jump, and I knew somebody who was really good friends with him.
Okay.
It was somebody who knew somebody who was really good friends with him. So he does this jump, right? You go to the top of the jump, and they're looking at the jump before he does it. It's like 25 double-decker buses in London or some stupid
yeah.
shit.
Yeah.
And he's... They're looking at the jump, and Evil's looking at it, and this other guy's looking at it, and the other guy goes, you can't do that. And he went, yeah, I know. He went, what? He said, yeah, I know, I can't do it, but Everybody's here.
That's so...
I was like, fuck. And so he does... They're watching it. He does the jump. Fucking last bush. Bam! Fucking...
Yeah, that drag that he... Yeah, the way his body always just like...
And he does that and he lands there and this guy that I'm not going to say who is, he runs over and he's like, oh my God, he's dead. He's dead. He's dead. And he runs over and they get the helmet up and Evel Knievel says to this guy, hey... Get that broad out of my room, will you?
That's so funny.
He's worried about his wife coming when he was dead.
I just remembered I fucked a waitress from the Playboy Club.
There's a broad in my room. Get her out before my wife gets here.
He goes, before the road rash sets in, could you get that fucking slut out of my room?
Oh, my God.
I left her drinking champagne and doing coke off a midget.
Yeah, no, we don't say
little
that.
Little person.
Yeah, there you go.
Little person.
I
sorry.
See, I don't. That's not a good one, is it?
The midge?
Yeah, you can't say that.
I don't think you can. I'm friends with little people, and I apologize to them. The smallest apology.
the most adorable apology.
The most tiniest.
Do you remember?
You know, ticklish.
You know, Dave Attell's album. Oh, yes, thanks for the memory. I
still listen to it.
I had to, the first time I heard that, I was driving in California. I had to pull off the side of the road when he does that thing about the...
You know, dude stuff. A little person. Yeah, midget.
Take me to your midget world.
He had a great joke. He had like almost like a follow-up to that joke where he goes, they don't want to be called midgets anymore. You know what they want to be called? Little people. Well, that's fine. If you call them little people, then you call me a sky god. I control the lights. And he's like talking about the light switch and you're like, dude, fucking Attell's the best.
I mean, Attell is fucking amazing.
When you do the Late Late Show, how do you get approached to host? Because I'll tell you, an American late night, pretty big surprise to see a Scott holding like, it down.
Nobody more surprised than me. I mean, what happened was that I had been on Craig Kilborn's show a couple of times.
Who was the host of the
Late Late Show? Who was the host of the show before me? And
The Daily Show, man. If you follow Craig Kilborn, get ready for your pockets to get fat. If you're following, if you're getting Craig Kilborn sloppy seconds, you're going to be able to buy a boat.
Yeah,
you, John Stewart.
Yeah, you know, I won't lie to you. The money was different then. I mean, it wasn't podcast in your house money, but it was money.
I don't mean to brag, but I'm sponsored by BetterHelp. So
you know,
you need
BetterHelp. It's never too late to get therapy. You know, it never. Do you get the florist one as well?
Do you get? Oh no, we don't do that. We do the big ones. We do are BetterHelp. We do Zocdoc. That's a big one.
I'm not familiar with that. You want to talk me through ZocDoc? Make a couple of...
This is where he's an editing whiz.
Yeah, yeah.
Drops the ZocDoc for you right now.
Nice.
Oh, man. If you are worried about something going on in your body, you know, maybe you got an ankle that hurts. Maybe your hip pops in a weird way. And you're like, well, who the hell do I go talk to about this? ZocDoc.com. ZocDoc.com is a free website and an app that can help you find doctors in your network that have available appointments. We're talking about specialists, for almost any specialist you can find, but it helps you find someone that you can book with an in-network appointment with more than 150,000 providers across all 50 states. If you're looking for dermatology, dentistry, primary care, eye care, any of the other specialties, ZocDoc has got your back. You want to see a doctor in person? Great. Prefer a video visit? Hey, you can do that too. When you're ready, you can see their real-time availability and click to book instantly. No phone tag, no waiting around for an email back. So all you got to do is stop putting off those doctor's appointments. Go to ZocDoc.com/Soder to find an instantly book a doctor you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/Soder. ZocDoc.com/Soder. And thank you, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this message. We love you. Listen, I know it's winter and it's cold, and you're thinking, I'm gonna stay under these sweatshirts and these long shirts, and then all of a sudden, boom, it's spring, and you're like, damn, I should have changed my diet, because now I'm in t-shirts and I feel fat as hell. That's at least my personal thoughts. But welcome Factor Meals. You can get good meals, easy to prepare, right there. We're talking quality, functional ingredients. We're talking about whatever diet you want to do, high protein, calorie smart, Mediterranean diet, always fresh, never frozen, ready in about 2 minutes. There's no prep, there's no stress. And all you got to do is head to factormeals.com/soder50off. Use the code soder50off. That's 50. So that's Soder 50 off to get 50% off and free breakfast for a year. Eat like a pro this month with Factor. New subscriptions only, varies by plan. One free breakfast item per box for 1 year while subscription is active. But how did you get approached to do...
Well, I had done the show a couple of times and Craig Kilborn quit. He just up and quit after 5 years. And so they had this idea that they were going to have rotating hosts and a sort of bake-off, like America's Got Talent thing, to see who'd be the host. And they said, would you like to do it? And I went, yeah, all right.
Yeah.
So I did two nights, and I was like, oh, I fucking love this.
Yeah.
And then they boiled it down to four guys who were going to get the job. It was D.L. Hughley.
Great.
A great comic. That's who I thought was going to get it. Michael Ian Black, also really good.
Great.
Damien Fahey, also really great.
Yeah.
And me.
Oh, wow.
Doing a job that real Americans don't want to do.
That's what we do with all immigrants.
Yeah, yeah. So
picking strawberries and hosting
all that's right. It was a different time.
Yeah.
You
could have been on a farm in Fresno.
Yeah, but
it's fucking backbreaking work.
But they had this. We all got a week each.
Yeah.
And then I thought DL's going to get it for sure. Because he's like established, famous guy.
He's the king of comedy.
Right.
He's one of the kings.
He's one of the kings of comedy, the original kings of comedy. And then I thought, Michael Ian Black, he's right in that late night world. He's very much that thing.
He was also phenomenal on Best Week Ever, on I Love the 90s. He was great at talking really head stuff. I mean, he's also like, you know, improv master.
Right, exactly. And he's one of the, what's the name of that guy?
Oh, yeah. The three... Stella,
right. He's great in that. And then the night I was there to check it out and see what it was like, Damien Fahey was doing his show. And I was like, this kid's fucking great.
Yeah.
There's no way I'm getting this job. And I got it.
Wow.
And that was really it. They boiled it down to four and I got the job.
And it was in LA. You were living in LA.
I was in LA and I was going through a divorce.
Okay.
And what happened, I was making these movies.
Yeah.
And these movies are the independent movies, so you have to be out of town. And I was going through a divorce, and I had a young son. I thought, I need a job. It's going to keep me in town.
Yeah.
So when they said, you want to try out for this? I'm like, fuck yeah, because...
Get your creative juices going. You're in town.
Stay in town.
And late night, from what I've noticed, is one of the only schedules. It's a schedule. So you actually have a schedule. It's not stand-up where they go, we need you to go to this city, we need you to go to this. You're there.
A little bit of that. But even when I was doing it, and even the Drew Carey show as well, all through all of it, I always did stand-up.
Yeah.
Because you kind of like, now, you're a comedian, so you understand this. If I don't keep doing this, I'm going to lose my chops.
Yeah.
And also, I have to maintain an autonomy with the corporate overlords.
Like, you had to be like, I don't fucking need you. I got my own money.
Right. So, like, if you fuck up, if you, you know, I mean, we didn't call it getting canceled back then, but, you know.
It's called getting fired.
Yeah, it's just,
stop saying canceled. You're not a sitcom. You're a person.
Yeah, it's right. So it was kind of like, I always felt I had to go out and do it. So even although I was doing the show, I would go out, you know, every other weekend if I didn't have custody that weekend of my son. I was like out on the road. I remember one night, Jon Stewart was hosting the Oscars for the first time.
Sure.
And I was doing Tommy T's Steakhouse and Comedy in Pleasanton.
There you go. Yeah. Pleasanton, California. Yeah. Shout out. That's where my family lived. Bay Area, East
Steakhouse
Bay.
Steakhouse and Comedy.
Well,
yeah.
I don't mean, yeah, that. I
Have
know,
you ever played that room?
No, I never. I would love to. My dad graduated high school in Pleasanton,
you
California.
You gotta go. It's an L-shaped room. It's impossible.
It's
it's like a fucking Rubik's Cube underwater with sharks. Oh my God.
When they put together rooms that don't work in stand up and then have stand up there, you're almost impressed where you're like, are you trying to get us to stand up for ourselves or to say something? Because you go, this can't work. Because you have to pivot each way.
You know what I like? Did you ever get this one? Because this is when I started, this was the thing. There was no comedy clubs in Glasgow. And they used to say, all right, it was music clubs. So it'd be one band on and then they would change the equipment, another band on. So they would say, all right, go up and do 5 minutes of your stand-up comedy while we change the equipment in the back.
Yeah.
I was like, what? And these were clubs that there wasn't comedians.
Sure.
Like, so Billy Connolly was a comedian.
Yeah.
And then that was it.
Yeah.
And so I'd go up to these punk rock clubs, and they'd be shouting before I hit the microphone. They'd be like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Fucking cunt, fuck you.
I'm like, I just wanted to tell you
hi, everybody.
I just wanted
hi,
to funny thing happened on the way here.
Let me tell you, I just bought a house. You know, it's like, fucking hell.
What got you into stand-up in Scotland? If there isn't a scene, I'm always fascinated by, because I think for, you know, my generation, it was easier. We had watched all the stand-up. We kind of knew what to do without knowing what to do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think when I came up, there was the Jackie Robinson effect of Billy Connolly, right? Billy Connolly.
One of the greatest of all time.
Greatest of all time.
It aged well.
Yeah.
You go about watch Billy Connolly, you're like, motherfucker, that guy's
amazing.
Funny.
Amazing. And how he started is he was a folk musician.
Sure.
And he'd be playing in bars and he would talk between the songs. And people used to just go for the bit between the songs. And he just stopped playing songs. That's how he became a fucking
really?
Star. Yeah.
I never knew that was how he
Yeah, got that's how he got into it. And then the other, so there was Billy, who I kind of, Billy's 20 years older than me.
Yeah.
So when he's getting famous, like in his early 30s, I'm like early teenage.
Yeah.
And he's the guy that we're not allowed to listen to. Yeah. Like, so we get the album and we're like listening to it. And so I'm like, oh, fuck, I want this. I want to be part of this.
The coolest comedians are two prepubescent boys. Because they go like, this guy.
This guy fucking rocks.
This guy doesn't eat his vegetables.
This guy wears pants with stars on them.
But they're just like, this guy. You watch it. That's how I felt about the first time I saw Eddie Murphy.
Chris Rock. Another one. Yeah.
Or guys like Carlin. I remember him being like, man, this guy just speaks up.
He's so cool.
He's so cool.
Yeah, he's really cool.
He was, you know, I was obviously, I saw older George Carlin, so he's bald with a ponytail.
And in my mind,
I was like, this guy.
He's bald with a ponytail and he's still cool.
Cool as hell. Wearing all black.
Because most guys bald with a ponytail, you're a geography teacher.
At best.
Yeah. Not that, I mean, geography can be cool.
It's great.
Let's be honest, it can. It can be cool.
Mountains and rivers. No one's caring.
Crop rotation,
older.
Everybody. Yeah. Isn't that exciting?
Yeah. I don't want to hear about geography until I'm older. And then
the exciting world of kelp.
Yeah. And then you get older and you go, I do want to know about kelp.
I'm interested.
All the stuff that I look down my nose at when I'm a kid, now I'm interested in learning.
Fucking stick around, Junior. I'm 63. And now I'm like, you know, for a long time, I was like, I'm an atheist. This is all bullshit. Yeah. Now I'm like, you know.
I might. Well, you're getting closer.
Yeah. You know, you start feeling the horseman on your shoulder a little bit. You know, like.
I know.
I'm like, hang on. I never said it completely. You know.
That's what's interesting to watch my friends, because I'm in my 40s now, I watch my friends that were apolitical, punk, I don't care, anarchy, and now they go, just taxes under the Republicans might be a little bit better. It's getting all of us.
Was it Shane that did that thing about early onset Republicans?
It's unbelievable.
That fucking masterpiece of comedy.
It's one of my favorite bits.
He goes,
you first see it where you go, I remember the State Farm guy used to be white. and then you're watching a doc. It's on Beautiful Dogs.
Oh my god, that guy's fucking great.
He's unbelievable. Yeah. That's what I love. Was like my favorite part about stand up is seeing stuff that you go, I'm going through that.
Nate
Bargatze had one of my favorite lines years ago. We were on the road somewhere. I was opening for him, and he was talking. You know, he does a lot of joke about marriage. And he, at one point, we're driving. He goes, "Man, comics in the 80s and 90s." They nailed it about marriage. You go back and watch all that material and you go, they're not wrong.
Yeah,
they got a lot of it right.
It's pretty good.
I know it was a lot of it was like, take my wife, please. But then you listen and you go,
well, I used to, that take my wife, please. That was the Henny Youngman, right?
Sure.
And I thought, you know, because people got so fucking literal for a while there, if he'd have gone up and said, take my wife, please, they'd have taken his wife. they were like, oh, you said it.
We fucking got him.
It's because it's that whole thing. I mean, like, isn't the skill, and Anthony Jeselnik talks about this, and I think he's a great comedian.
He's fantastic.
And he's doing that thing. No, the job is to say a horrible thing and get away with it.
Yeah, that's a bank robbery.
Yeah.
You go in and get the money.
You gotta get away with it.
You can't shoot the teller.
Yeah.
That's not a bank robbery. That's a slaughter.
Yeah, that's murder.
Yeah.
You gotta go.
Yeah, you gotta go in and, like, the best comedians are the ones that hand the teller the note that says, I have a gun. And then they go, fuck, empty the vault.
Give me the money.
Yeah, but you don't have a gun.
Do you have a gun? No, but I had a very difficult mother.
Yeah. I had a father that didn't care.
Yeah, and there you go.
So when you're getting in, you see Billy Connolly going, and then you go, I might be able. Were you getting in trouble in school? Were you that
kind of? I dropped out of high school when I was just after my 16th birthday.
Just being like, I don't give a shit.
I was fucking, you know, I was a little crazy.
Sure.
And, you know, I was drinking drugs and... And there was punk rock was very vivid when I was that age. I came of age during all that.
Americans love to suck our own dicks about music, but UK did punk probably better than anybody.
It was pretty intense. It was
because to me, I it's the snarl. It's the UK snarl. Yeah. It's that fucking.
You fucking, oi, fuck you.
And I understand that, like, you get the Henry Rollins and the Black Flag, and you also get
nothing wrong with that.
And Bad Brains, I talked to Eric Andre about. But to me, for some reason in my head, punk rock music is, like, the pinnacle of it is UK.
I think like, 76, 77 UK, you know.
You also had the Queen. You had something to go, like, fuck you.
Yeah. But it was fuck you, Your Majesty.
Queen Mum.
Fuck you. But she is good for tourism.
That was always the thing where, like, in America, we can rage against the president, and then they die, and they're like, fuck you, fucking rotten hell. And then it's always funny, because when royalty dies, everyone except the Irish... are like, rest in peace. And the Irish are like, up the road.
No, you see, there's a whole mess of stuff that I don't want to fucking talk about.
Oh, I bet.
Yeah, I grew up in all of that too.
Yeah.
Like the troubles were going on. I'm in Glasgow. There's sectarian violence, sectarian hatred. And sure. Fucking, so there's
real
pretty scary. Yeah. And so doing comedy, it didn't seem like an option at first. And I was a drummer in punk bands.
Okay.
Right. So I would be playing in these bands and people would be spitting on you and all that.
Dude, do people?
See, that's never coming back after COVID. That's no. Spitting.
They're
that's
like, oh, you fucker. Now I got to go test.
Yeah.
How were those fans or just people that just didn't like punk music? And they're just like, fuck you, I'm going to spit on you.
I think column A, column B. I think there's a lot of that.
Because if you're feeling the need to go spit on someone, I would just be like, there's a punk show down the street.
Yeah, let's go spit. What it was it's kind of like podcasts now. I mean, look, this is a proper big podcast. Yeah. But podcasts, really, I mean, I've got a fucking podcast. I forget about it.
This is great. I had a Sirius XM show for 7 years, and then I come here.
I did one for 2 years. Yeah. I hardly noticed it.
Yeah. I'm telling you, and then people now are finding it, and they're like, I just found out you did the show with Big J for 8 years. You're like, it's all online. You should go back and listen to the catalog.
That's amazing.
Do you have people doing that with the Late Show?
Oh, yeah, all the time. People will come up to me in the street and say, I watched the show last night.
I stopped doing it
12 fucking years ago.
With the stand-up, so this is, I'm glad I get to talk to you, the person, because I always wanted to do the Late Show, but they told me that you filmed in clumps, that you would film stand-up like four at a time.
Yeah, that's because the studio was small.
That's
and
why.
We couldn't get everybody in. So if there was a band on, or there was a stand-up on, we had to move. I mean, honestly, it was about maybe four times the size of this room.
Really?
It was fucking tiny.
Small room,
When Carol Burnett was on, she said, this was the wardrobe when I worked with
her. Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah, back in the day with, like, big studios and shit.
Yeah, it was crazy. So,
Cash App. You know Cash App. I've been talking about it. It's one of those apps that you can trust to put your money in, to pay your friends, or maybe if you got to deposit something, boom, 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 whatever, whatever, you got Cash App. Well, guess what? Cash App just released a new status program for the way people actually spend called Cash App Green. It unlocks new ways for you to pay, get rewarded, and easily grow or manage your money on your terms. Now, when you spend at least $500 a month with the Cash App card or Cash App Pay, you earn green status, which unlocks benefits up to $200 of free overdraft coverage, high borrow limits, and custom personalized cashback offers every Friday at places you love to shop. Turn everyday spending into status with Cash App Green. Download Cash App today or visit cash.app/new to learn more about this and other great features launching now. And for a limited time, new Cash App customers can earn $10 if they use the code CASHAPP10 in their profile at sign up and send $5 to a friend within 14 days. Terms apply.
Cash App is a financial services platform, not a bank. Banking services provided by Cash App's bank partners, prepaid debit cards issued by Sutton Bank, member FDIC, Cash App Green, overdraft coverage, borrow, cashback offers, and promotions provided by Cash App, a Block Incorporated brand. Visit cash.app/legal/podcast for full disclosures.
You know, we're talking about winter, but also it's about to be swimsuit weather. It creeps up on you so fast. It's like, yeah, dude, I don't know. I'm in sweatpants. The next thing you know, you're like, where are my swimsuits? Well, Chubbies has got you. If you need a new swimsuit, go with the original, the OG dog, Chubbies. We're talking about swim trunks that fit you great, show off as much thigh as you want to, dry fast. That's the big one. And I'm telling you, they got that stretch fabric that handles swimming laps just as well as it handles lounging poolside. Plus, Chubbies is celebrating 15 years. The original shorts that redefine proper length shorts are back. Designed for comfort, built for stretch, and designed to give you thigh-high confidence. For a limited time, Chubbies is giving our listeners 20% off with the code SOTER20 at chubbiesshorts.com. That's 20% off your order with code SOTER20. Give your thighs the VIP treatment they deserve with Chubbies. Support our show and tell them that we sent you.
We had to film the stand-up in odd ways. And sure. We had to film, like, musicians were on the show that I never met.
See, that was, and I'll tell you, because we can talk about it now, but that was the reason I didn't want to do the show, was I was like, I'm not going to meet Craig.
And they were like, and I don't blame you. Because,
they were like, no, you're not.
Because then
like,
you don't get the come on over thing, which you need to get.
As a guy that grew up without a dad, I am seeking the approval of successful men. That's why I didn't do Colbert.
Right. Because
when Colbert came on the air, it was really big. I was like, I loved Colbert Report. I love Stephen Colbert. I was a huge fan of him on The Daily Show. And they're like, oh, he's going to be doing it in the old Letterman studio. I never got to do Letterman. So I was like, oh, I'd love to do Colbert. And then they're like, we film it in chunks. And then they're going to put it on episodes. And I was like, I'm good. I don't want to go.
I think that's the right choice, because what happens is if you just do it in a chunk, it's not the same.
No.
I actually feel this now about stand-up specials.
Sure.
I don't think I'll ever do another one.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, the longer I do stand-up, and I've been doing it now for a long fucking time,
yeah,
the more I kind of love the purity of it as the immediacy. When you talk about authenticity, you know, that's it. You know, that's it now.
Yeah, you're saying something to a crowd and they're going to choose. They choose collectively if they're going to laugh.
You like it, you don't like it, you feel the room. It's an art form which, look, I've made some specials. Some of them better than others. I've seen some great specials and people do really good ones. But it's not the same,
no,
man.
It's interesting to me when I hear people online talking about going to their first live show, stand-up wise,
because
a lot of people just take in specials. They just take in clips online.
Right.
And then they go to an actual live show and they're like, this is incredible.
It blows your fucking head off. Yeah.
It's also why a lot of people are hypercritical about certain comedians' stand-up, where they go, he sucks. And you go, I can understand you don't like watching his special. I've seen him in a room. He kills. He does
who's that Leno is like that.
Yeah, Leno's one of the great stand-ups of all time.
Oh my God. I did a bunch of gigs with Leno in Arsenio Hall.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was fantastic fun. But I was watching him, and I was like, God damn, I didn't know he was that good.
I was one of the guys that came up loving Bill Hicks. And I knew about Bill Hicks's bit about the Doritos and him killing himself. You're off the artistic roll call because you took all this money. And I was always like, you know, I was young and angst, full of angst. So I was like, yeah, fuck, go after Leno. Fucking corny asshole. He took it from Letterman. And then I find out the reason that Bill Hicks was so angry at Leno was because he loved his stand-up when Leno was younger.
Yeah, he felt he'd sold out.
And then people would talk about it and be like, oh, Leno would come in the Comedy Store and just bury everything.
Yeah, he's pretty fucking good.
And he still does it.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting, though. He's very odd, Jay, because I said to him one night, we were talking, you know how comics talk backstage, you're talking about, you know, bad audiences, good audiences, stories, and Jay said this thing, I thought, that is fucking weird. He goes, you know what I say? Yeah.
Everyone does the I was wondering if you're going to do the Leno voice.
He said, you know, if I have a crowd there, if they're a little crowd, I increase by 8%.
That's correct. That's a scientist.
Yeah, I'm like, 8%? Yeah. I don't even know what 8% is.
Yeah, he goes, my rear engines are not firing.
That's 8%. 8%.
It is. I think that is a sign of iconic an iconic career when someone can make a noise and you,
Know who it is. Yeah,
like
yeah.
If I was doing Seinfeld, I'd go, and you go, it's Jerry Seinfeld.
Yeah.
Or like Chappelle's like, I don't know. And you go,
oh, that's good.
That up and down. But Leno really is like, oh, you're doing Jay Leno. It's like immediate. So, mine would be like if people are trying to do me, they're going, that's mine.
That sounds a little bit like a nature documentary to me. But okay. Well, that's all right. You know what?
I'm still trying to find out.
I just accused you of not being able to do yourself.
Yeah, which people were accusing for years.
Yeah. You can't even do yourself.
And then I went into therapy and now I'm authentic.
You know what's interesting, I think, about comedy that always struck me about it is the one thing, because it's so subjective, stand-up comedy, that people will say, when you said that thing, people will say, oh, he sucks.
Yeah.
You go, they will say this thing, they go, that's not comedy. And you go, well, what are all these people laughing at then? It's not comedy to you. Like, you don't say to music.
That's
not music.
You came from the music world, and then you get into comedy. And I think I grew up idolizing comics and comedy. Like, I was a comedy, I still am, like a comedy nerd. Like, right. I fucking cared. Listen to albums. I go back and listen to old albums. And there's something about it where I took it too seriously.
Yeah.
And then I moved to New York and it became this thing of like, I hated people that I thought were doing it wrong.
Oh, yeah.
Of that whole like.
Yeah, I know that feeling.
And then you don't realize that you've become the asshole.
Yeah.
Because you're going like.
You become the film student.
Yes. Yeah. That's exactly it. I know. Where you're like, no, he doesn't fucking care. He doesn't even know.
That joke was
He never listened to Lenny Bruce. It's like, dude, no one listens to Lenny Bruce. Shut up. You know what I mean? But that idea. And then what set me free was, this was a recent epiphany, whereas I was like, oh, well, it's just like genres and music.
Yeah.
If I'm a singer-songwriter, I'm not going to be mad about a pop band.
No.
Or a rapper.
Well, actually, what I noticed now, and this is great about your generation of comics, is you guys actually are getting like musicians, is you'll cross over.
Yeah.
You'll actually, I mean, like, you know, 10 years ago, talking to 40-year-old comedian about Leno, all I'm going to get is hate.
Yeah.
You know, and now you're like, well, no, he does this, he does that. It's like, I think it's a little more educated about what it is.
Yeah, because I think that is one of the benefits of the industry losing its absolute power.
I agree.
Because, you know, we're talking about studios and stuff, and I think it's crazy when you look back to those old Hollywood icons and you realize, well, the only reason they had a mansion, that was the studio's mansion.
Yeah.
That Rolls-Royce was the studio's Rolls-Royce. Yeah, like, they had, the industry had so much control over the individual that they'd go, if you want to work for Warner Brothers, I better not see you with a black guy.
That's amazing voice. I've never heard a voice that so defines an era just like that one.
But that was exactly it. When they'd be like, I heard you're smoking cigarettes. A lady doesn't smoke cigarettes. Better not catch out. And they'd go like, well, I can't smoke, or one of the big film companies is going to take away my shit.
I still feel a little traumatized by that now.
Absolutely.
We
were the last generation to go through your career by going like, I watched the industry crumble.
Yeah.
I came up under the industry.
Great.
Comedy Central's here.
Yeah.
The booker for, you know, when the booker for Letterman would be out.
Booker
for Letterman or the booker for Conan. You got to have your tight set.
Yeah, get your set and all
and
that.
And now late night is like, please, please come do stand up. And you're like, it's very weird to me because also your show is very big. My friends getting on that show, it was a big moment in their career. Ron Funches. I remember there were a lot of comics going like, I'm doing late night with Craig Ferguson. Mm-hmm. What's funny is, I'm trying to act like this is all formal. You go, I'm doing Craig Ferguson. Everyone said they were doing you.
Yeah,
I'm doing Craig Ferguson. And
sadly, none of them were.
But I remember that feeling of like, oh, now you might get fans. Yeah. It was like this access to fans that now doesn't exist.
Well, I think the whole idea of the word fans as well, I think, like, you know who has fans? The Yankees has fans. Yeah. You know, I mean, maybe the Rolling Stones have fans. I feel like if you're a comedian, if you're a proper comedian, that's not a good vibe, you know, because you need to... You need to make them laugh. And if they're just laughing because you're your fans,
But see, that's also where we're at right now, where you say kind of a crossover of like rock and roll, where there are comedians that are just names.
Oh, I know.
So they just go, yeah. So they just go, I'm just going to go watch this guy. But that's always why I argue, because a lot of those people will catch hate and other comedians will go, well, he sucks. And you go, well, maybe he's just indoctrinated by his fans. But go watch him in the room.
That's why
if you watch him in the room, it could be different.
That's why you always have to do, and I think real comics always will play clubs. Doesn't matter if you're playing stadiums. You still got to go by. You have to smell the chicken fingers and fucking get your fucking joke past the fucking bill coming out at the end of your set.
You need a random glass breaking in a setup. Yeah.
Yes,
and then they're going, no, finish the joke. Yeah. And you go, well, it's a whole thing.
Oh, you're great. What?
I'm saying you're great. Yeah. That's the worst, is when people are talking and you go,
positive heckling, it's very bad.
What are you talking about? We're just saying that you're great. It's like, well, you're fucking up the show.
Yeah. So when people come down the front and talk to each other, but you got to deal with that. Yeah. That's part of it.
Was there any part of you while you're doing the Late Late Show that was, you were just like, I can't wait for this to be over so I can just do stand up? Like, was that by the end, by around like 2013?
Yeah, by the end of it, it got a little different. The beginning of when you first get like famous like that, like the Drew Carey Show, you're kind of famous. You're a guy on a sitcom. You know,
I mean, I was a huge fan of it, and I probably would have been one of those assholes that saw you and went, Drew Carey Show.
Yeah, that's like, right. Yeah, yeah. But I mean,
my character has a name.
But you would say Drew Carey Show. That's it. When the Late Night Show kind of kicked in and started doing well, I think I went a little crazy for a while, like paranoid.
Sure.
You know, and I used to, I don't know if I've ever told MD this, but I used to do the show every night. I had my passport in my suit. Yeah, I was like, if I need to get the fuck out of here, I go straight to the fucking airport.
What kind of Jason Bourne shit is that?
I don't know, man.
Arrested you, have six different passports?
Yeah, yeah.
Who is this man? There's six different
Jesus
identities.
Jesus Christ, it's Craig Ferguson.
Craig Ferguson was the top cocaine runner for the Sinaloa cartel.
Wait a minute, he doesn't have a limp. What the fuck? Kaiser Soze?
This guy was fucking, he's not even Scottish.
He was fucking with us the whole time. He's Joey Finkelstein from Jersey.
He grew up in Paramus. We all knew that Scottish brogue was fake.
That's rubbish. But what it was I think that it's that kind of whole thing, because your life at that time, I felt like everything was in the power of the TV gods that are no longer there.
That's what it was, where they'd go like, that's what the cancel, for all these people that use the word canceling, it's from that thing.
I think it's from these execs would go,
it's a bad look. We're going to have to let you go.
Yeah.
And again, they had the power.
Yeah, they did. And it's funny, I remember talking to my tour manager. I still have a tour. It was just me and the tour manager now in a Ram 1500. That's how I fucking roll.
I love that. That's what I want.
Yeah, no, it's the fucking best.
Simplicity.
I tell you, at one point, I had the G4, the bus, the entourage, all that. And two things. One, you don't make any fucking money.
No, because all the money's going to that.
Right. And two, it's weirdly not as much fun. But
you feel like it's isolating?
Yeah, it becomes about something else.
Yeah, you're a circus.
Yeah.
The one thing I'll say, that, and I'm very vocal about this, you know, Shane's one of my good friends, and I've been very, very happy to watch him keep his humanity through all this, but he's putting in effort to stay the same guy.
You gotta.
And so is Nate, where you go, this
so
is...
So are you.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I'm kind of finicky. I enjoy this so much that I don't want anyone fucking with it, because I just like doing this. I get to have, I mean, when I told Katie that Craig Ferguson was coming over, and she's like, I'm going to the airport and you got fucking Craig Ferguson. She like is such a big fan. But to me, it's like, I'm still blown away with the fact that you'd come and hang out on my couch and talk to me while my dog chews her toy in her kennel, you know?
But what you were talking about, and what's so great about it, is the authenticity. What happened when I was doing Late Night, people that became my friends, like really became friends, were weird. Some of them are very big fucking stars. I became really friendly with Carrie Fisher, who was fucking...
It's Princess Leia.
It was unbelievably nice woman.
And one of the best cameos in 30 Rock.
Right.
One of the best episodes of 30 Rock is she her coming back as a writer.
Great. She was great. It was one night she had done a tour of Australia and she came back to the show and she was just talking about it. And she said, I got you something when I was in Australia. I was like, you did? She did. She got me a pair of dried kangaroo testicles.
What a good gift.
It was beautiful.
Did you ever think in the 70s when you're in Scotland that Princess Leia would give you a sack of nuts?
I had some ideas, but...
You thought she was going to try out different nuts.
I didn't think she'd be handing me testicles from a kangaroo, but it all worked out.
But I understand, because what you're basically doing is you're living in this sort of nap dream that is your life.
Yeah, it's weird. It's weird because... Do you ever get now and again when you meet someone super famous that was famous when you were a kid,
yeah,
and you think, what if I just like punch him in the fucking face?
Jerry
or something?
Seinfeld.
You know? Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what if I fucking just knocked, he was rude to me and I was like, what if I just knocked out Seinfeld?
Yeah.
And he'd be like, what is that?
What's the deal?
He led with a jab. I tried to snap the jab away.
And then Lando comes in and he's like, what's going on? What's going on?
Calm down. Jerry, keep your left hand up. That's what it is. You're dipping your shoulder. You gotta keep your feet. You're gonna get knocked out. You seen this? You heard about this? Apparently, these people are getting knocked out because they're dropping the left hand.
I gotta say, your Lando's getting a little camp.
It is camp.
It's getting a little camp.
Where the one guy goes,
sure, I have cars and things.
You seen this? You heard about this?
That's a little sassy, Lando.
It is.
I quite like
honestly,
it.
Honestly, I still am pissed he took it from Letterman. honestly, with the late I was, Dave was my guy.
Dave was my boss. I got to tell you a Dave story. This is fucking great. So,
if you love comedy that keeps you guessing, playoff hockey is right up your alley. NHL on TNT has the best coverage, and it is just as entertaining as a great stand-up set. Paul Bissonnette is hilarious on the panel, and Wayne Gretzky breaks down the action like a pro. Every game is intense, with overtime and big hits that make every shift matter. Studio coverage adds to the fun, making it the best place to watch. Watch the Stanley Cup playoffs on TNT, TBS, True TV, and HBO Max.
Dave is a complicated guy. I don't think that's going to make the news if I say that. You know,
I think that's been written in at least 7 books.
Yeah, he's a complicated guy, but he's the reason I was able to do Late Night was because of Dave, because he owned the time slot. He physically owned it.
Well, because he got fucked over,
right?
And then he was like, "Guess what? I'll make your life a living hell, and I'll go to CBS."
And he owned. They gave him 2 hours, so he actually CBS couldn't do much about me. Because Dave owned the time slot.
Really?
Yeah. And because Dave owned the time slot and Dave was making his own show, he's not paying attention. CBS aren't paying attention. So I've got fucking dancing horse, robot skeleton.
Yeah, I was going to say the robot. Is that when you bust out the robot?
Yeah.
You go, guys, I'm pretty sure we put a robot. We won't even get it out.
Nobody's even coming. It doesn't matter. It doesn't fucking matter. Let's get the fucking robot out.
Yeah.
But it was an odd kind of feeling, because I've always revered Dave, and I still do. And
he's the cool...
I'm a little scared of him.
He's my friend's cool older brother.
Yeah.
Because I would say Conan was the one that I took possession
of. Right, okay.
That was like growing up with The Simpsons.
Yeah.
Him starting at that time was the time that I was staying up late.
Yep.
So, and I was like, oh, and he was silly in a way that I went... It's like a band. Again, it's like a band that you claim ownership of.
Right, you become part of the...
Conan is my guy.
Right. So Dave, if I had anyone...
Sure.
It was Dave. I didn't really have anyone because I didn't grow up here. But, but Dave, I was like, oh my God, this guy's fucking great. He's a genius and all that stuff. And he is.
He's kind of an asshole, which I really like.
So about 2 years ago, I was in L.A., and I was doing a podcast. I can't remember what podcast it was, but I was doing somebody's podcast, and it was being filmed, and I was like really fucking grungy. I thought, you know what? Yeah. I'm going to get a new pair of sneakers at least. I want to get a pair of sneakers. So I go to the Grove.
Yeah.
I think if I go to the Nike store at the Grove, just when it opens at 10 a.m., I'll get a pair of sneakers. Nobody there. I'll be able to get it done. So I go to the Nike store at the Grove at 10 a.m. They open the doors, and I walk in, and I'm looking at the sneakers. And I feel his hand on my shoulder. And I turn around, it's fucking Dave. David Letterman. What? And he said, this is the most beautiful thing. He said, how long have you worked here?
That's great. That is great.
That I was like, great. What the fuck are you doing
that's
here?
That's great. He was always, to me, that is exactly who Letterman is. He's got the best joke at the right time.
Yeah.
And it's like when he, I know a lot of people in hindsight were like, mad at him for doing that to Paris Hilton. But when Paris Hilton gets out of jail and then tries to go sell her perfume, and then Dave was like, got any good story? He just immediately like yep. said something where you go, he is the coolest, funniest in the moment.
Yeah, and he's not afraid to own, you know, when he thought, you know what, that wasn't great. You know, he was okay about that.
He was.
What was great, I want to tell you what he said in the store, though, because after he said, how long have you worked here? I'm like, Dave, what the fuck are you doing in the Nike store, the Grove, at 10 a.m. in the morning? He said, doing some fucking podcast, and I thought I better get a pair of sneakers.
No way! The same reason. He's like, I need to shout it out, podcast. Like, that's fucking great.
Unbelievable, right?
That's so funny that he's like, I gotta do a podcast. Podcasts are making two late night legends.
Go to the Nike store.
Fucking, just buy some Nike Airs at fucking 10 in the morning.
I was like, oh my God, this is so fucking weird.
If anyone's angry about podcasting, look what it's done to your heroes.
Made them go by
fucking shock treatment. Treatment shoes.
I think podcasting, does it even get called that now? It's just a different kind of media.
I think it is a different medium. I think the Golden Globes trying to give it an award is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I think it's just stupid. It's like,
have you ever met any of them Golden Globers?
I don't care. The best part is not caring. You know what it is? It's because I got denied so much early on in my career that finally when I got stuff to make that was cool or people gave a shit about, I was just kind of like, oh, well, these people are unnecessary. I've never had one of those people book me at a Funny Bone in Omaha.
No, they won't.
Or book me at somewhere where I need to go do five shows because I just want to tell jokes.
Yeah, it's weird. The first time I came across the Golden Globe people, I'd done an independent movie that was doing pretty well. It was the late 90s, and I had written a movie, and I was in the movie, and it was doing great, and I was very excited about it. I actually, the lead actress was nominated for a Golden Globe. So part of the press thing, you have to go and meet the Hollywood foreign press, right? The people who, it's 100 people. I was like, this is like a fucking geriatric ward.
They were all old?
Well, it's not just old. They're kind of like, no, geriatric's not right. Like, this is kind of like a mental hospital or something. It's like these people.
They just wheel them in and they're like.
They're like shouting and stuff. I'm like, what the fuck?
So what was it? Was it you on a stage and then it's like 100?
Yeah, it's like 100 people. And I was like, and then they all come up and they want to meet. They're kind of like from the, you know, the Athens penny saver. I'm not talking Athens, Georgia either.
Greece. You're talking where, you know, it's like where they invented arithmetic.
Right, exactly.
Galileo's hub.
The Cairo Gazette and all that kind of stuff.
It's so funny.
And I'm like, oh my God. And
Kuala Lumpur Weekly.
Yeah,
it's like, we just want to talk to you.
Like, what the fuck is going on? And I looked over at the side of the stage, and the guy who ran the film company at the time was a guy called Mark Ordesky. And he ran Fine Line. He went on to make a series of films called The Lord of the Rings trilogy. He was like, I remember at the time.
I don't like little people in rings.
He said, I remember him saying at the time, I'd really like to make The Lord of the Rings. It's a series of movies. I'd really like to get that done. And I was like, you're out of your fucking mind. Yeah. So that'll never work.
Anyway, we
keep in touch. But he was a nice guy, and I was standing up there, and I'm like looking at us, and I looked over, and he was laughing his ass off because he knew I was going to go, what the fuck is this? And the second time I was there with him, I did these How to Train Your Dragon movies, the voice and that, and I was there with Jerry Butler and I, and Jaimin Hi-Su, and Kit Harington, and it was a bunch of fucking big time actors, and this guy said, you know, it's a question from the floor, and he said, okay, everyone, going down the line, say what you're going to be doing next after this show. And I was like, oh, fuck, here we go. Yeah. I'm stuck here. So Jerry started up. Jerry and I have been friends for a long time, but Jerry started talking about this movie he was working on. It's called The Gods of Egypt. And he was like, oh, The Gods of Egypt. And he talked for about 5 minutes. And he was talking about this film he was doing. And then it comes to me, and I said, I'm thinking again, a cat. And Jerry was like, buddy. Fuck you, man.
That's great. He's like, in Egypt, the gods were different. And you're going, I don't know how to name him Mr. Nibbles.
Yeah. Do you go for scrappers or do you go for a human name?
You know what that is when you were saying you stayed doing stand-up because it kept you sharp even during the Late Late Show.
Yeah.
You know, when I was doing Billions, that was kind of always my thing that I would go, well, you're not taking me off the road.
Yeah.
And like, to the point that on the show, there became a moment in between, I think like season 2 and season 3, where the producers were like, hey, we want to make you a part of the like full-on cast.
Right.
instead of doing a guest, because I was just a guest star every episode.
Yeah, that's kind of happened with me in the Drew Carey show as well. Yeah,
and the caveat was, I'll get more money, but then they control your schedule. And I went, you can't.
Not only do they control your schedule, but they control the perception of you publicly.
Yeah.
Or they want to.
Yeah, because and I saw that. I saw, and that's what my agent at the time said, was like, you know, they'll control your schedule. And I was like, absolutely not. Because it was really funny when they'd be like, hey, we have a very intense scene. We need you. And I wouldn't even be, I would just be like sitting background for it. But they'd be like, you need to be on camera for this. It's an intense scene. And I'd be like, no, I'm going to Yuck Yucks. Yeah. And they'd be like, it was, honestly, I remember what the club was. It was Rumors in Winnipeg. And they were like, we need you to film Thursday and Friday. And I was like, I'll be in Winnipeg. And it was, to me, I'm not a very like fuck authority kind of guy, but it was the first time in my life where I felt like I had ground to stand on, where I was like, no, Hollywood machine, I'll be going to Winnipeg, Manitoba.
I think it's fucking great that happened, that freedom happened for young artists to do that. And it's funny that I hear older comics, I've heard a couple of, you know, complaining in private about younger comics and saying, well, all they do is crowd work. I mean, they only do this crowd
work. A lot of them do.
You go, that's not all they do. That's all you see.
Yeah, because they don't want to burn the material.
You don't want to burn your material on social media, so you just burn up some crowd work. You're not going to do that again.
Yeah.
And I understand that.
It is. You know what it is? It's kind of like, to me, the way I would compare crowd work clips and stand-up is when they used to put lead in the gasoline in the United States.
Yeah.
And you go, I think it made a whole generation of serial killers, but also at the same time, it fueled our cars.
She made big fat
person. They go, what do you do for a living?
I fuck me.
This is some guy, that's some guy in Dharma Dragon going, would you fuck me? That's his crowd work.
You
fuck me, I'd fuck me. that's all I'm gonna see when I fucking see crowd work. It's just people going, hey. What do you do for a living?
It rubs lotion on its chicken fingers.
This guy just looked at me and he said this. What do I do for a living? You're fucking dead.
Oh, my God.
She's a great big fat person. Yeah, it's...
That movie is one of the movies that if I'm going through and it's on, I'll watch it to the end.
Can I tell you one of the funniest... It's one of the best movies of all time.
Yep.
Also, just funny. He really goes, what did multiple Migs say to you? He said, I could smell your...
Yeah.
Funny, I cannot... It's like one of the most favorite Anthony Hopkins lines.
Here's a great fucking Anthony Hopkins story. He told me the story himself. He said, he was talking about that movie, and he was very excited when the movie came out. He said, oh, it made me a worldwide star. You know, it's got an Oscar for Oscar, and I got to meet Her Majesty the Queen. And and he was talking about that, and he said, and when it came out, what he used to do was he would go to movie theaters where it was playing and wait till the credits rolled at the end, and then he would lean forward and say to someone, did you enjoy that?
That's crazy. That's that would fuck me up.
I know.
If Hannibal Lecter...
Yeah, you're like, did you enjoy that?
You go, yeah.
You would do your own fucking focus pool thing. You would do that.
That's what I miss about the old system, was that Bill Murray could go to a wedding at a hotel bar and buy a drink and go, no one will believe you that this happened. He would say that to people.
Yeah.
He would fuck with them and he'd go, no one will believe you and he'd leave. But now everyone's got camera phones.
I know.
So now Anthony Hopkins would have had a line down the theater of people going, can I get a selfie real quick?
Yeah.
Instead of just someone walks around and goes, you know, I saw Silence of the Lambs and Anthony fucking Hopkins was sitting behind me.
Yeah, and it's a great story.
It's
a great story.
I feel like that's what camera phones are destroying more than anything, are good stories to tell each other through, like, we're killing
the anecdote.
Yeah
I think you might, but I think there's a feeling. I mean, we talked about authenticity, and I've seen this a couple of times now in New York City, young people in coffee shops reading books.
Brother, it's back.
I'm fucking,
and I love it.
I'm like, God bless you.
It's in you. It truly is like I'm seeing young people do it, and because I was yelling until I was hoarse back in the day of like, you should always read books. It's great before you go to bed. Mm-hmm. It's just good.
Brainwaves on it.
Yeah, it's also good for your concentration.
Yep.
And then I just completely fell into internet slop.
Sure.
And now I'm trying to crawl out of the pool again, and I'm using Stephen King to get back in.
Yep.
But I made a mistake and read a hard book that took me 9-10 months to read, and then it felt like school. So now I'm jumping back in.
I think that's the same as what I did. I think it's like stand up. You lose your reading chops a little bit.
Yes.
And you have to fucking get back into it.
But get it with a short book. Colin Quinn recommended, and I would say this to other people, read Frankenstein. Read Mary Shelley's book. Frankenstein. It's short.
Dracula.
I'm going to read Dracula.
Oh, my God.
You know what?
Scariest fucking book.
So, and it's also way different than all the movies.
Oh, yeah.
Because I saw someone recently talking about Frankenstein because Guillermo del Toro put it out on with, and I haven't watched it yet. Apparently, that's much truer to the book.
Yeah, I haven't seen it yet, but.
In the book, it's the thing that everyone's blown away is Frankenstein's not dumb.
No.
The monster, not the doctor. The monster he creates isn't like, argh. He speaks. And he tells about how he learned how to speak in the family, the blind man that taught him.
Yeah.
There's like this great humanity, this heavy, heavy weight of humanity in that book. And it's very short. But Dracula's the next one I'm going to read.
Dracula's amazing because it's one of those amazing books. And there's a few of them I've read.
So I read Bram Stoker's, are you saying?
Yeah, Bram Stoker's Dracula.
All right.
And it's the sense of fucking menace.
Yeah.
There are books that, you know, I spend time in New York City,
sure.
And we have a place out of town. In the place out of town, it's a little countryfied. I can't read scary books out there. It's too fucking scary. It's too scary. I got to read them in New York. There's no fucking. If there's a vampire in New York, it's at a club.
So there's a place we go to We like to go to the Catskills.
Look, I think we know what we're saying.
Yeah, we go to the Catskills. But I was reading the book. I was reading was Dante's. I was during Inferno. Because I read, the Divine Comedy.
Yeah.
I read all three.
Yeah,
Purgatorio
and
Paradiso.
Yeah.
And you know, the Purgatory and the Heaven one are harder to read than Inferno. Because Inferno is so detailed and so it's scary.
Yeah.
There's like moments where, and it's like, it's a rhyming poem. But if you have it broken down, you're like, the things he describes are fucked up.
You know what
the river of blood that Alexander is in? There's
you know what I think is amazing though about Dante's Inferno is like when you get to the deepest level of hell.
Yeah.
What is the worst thing an Italian can imagine?
Ice.
It's being cold. It's so cold.
He goes, you don't understand Satan.
He's so cold.
It's so funny that people don't understand at the bottom of hell is a frozen lake.
Frozen lake.
That Satan's frozen in.
Yeah, yeah.
He's like stuck in this lake and he's got three heads.
Yeah.
With the description of the smaller stuff, of looking into the pits, and watching the demons creepy. Torture these
you're
people.
Gonna love Dracula.
You're gonna
love it.
Craig Ferguson and I are starting a book club.
Yeah,
this is fucking
it's a book club. We're kind of like Reese. It's like Reese Witherspoon.
Just bring your blankets.
What do I call it? Reese Witherspoon? That's not right.
Witherspoon.
Wither
fork. Wither knife.
I think I'm getting ready to join the Hollywood Foreign Press. You know what I'm saying?
I love it. I just gotta tell you, man, this has been. It's better than I expected. You're fucking awesome. I've been
right
a fan forever, and this is one of those moments where you meet someone and you're like, I was right. Because you don't want the feeling of I was wrong.
You know, I feel like there are younger comedians that I look at, guys who are 20 or so years younger than me, and I look at them, you're one of them.
Yeah.
But you go, and Shane's one of them.
Yeah.
But you go, fuck me. It's alive and well. Jesus Christ.
That makes me feel.
I think,
and I know Shane would love hearing that, just because as someone that grew up loving comedy, maybe a little too much.
Yeah, I understand.
It is like, man, this is the coolest job. And when I see people that have been in it, that I've watched from the time I was young, still feel that way about it.
Oh, yeah.
It makes me go like, that's just.
Do you know what's great about it as well? Is if you're in it for a long time, and this is one of the things I really love about it, when I do clubs and stuff now, or I just do like a theater and you do meet and greets, the audience is getting old with me too.
Yes.
It's the weirdest fucking thing. And we're all going through the same shit.
I remember being in my 20s doing jokes about blacking out, and now I'm doing jokes about my lower back hurting. And the same guys are out there going like,
fucking
you got to stretch your hips in the morning. And you go, I know.
It
used to be you wake up with your keys and you're like, well, I'm only fucking sleeping in a room without a window. And you're like, I don't give a shit. Now you're like, do take a vitamin C. Do take vitamin
Capital
C.
gains, am I right? Am I right?
Yeah.
401ks? Fuck me.
Check out Craig's podcast. Watch everything he's done. And go back and watch the Drew Carey show. These motherfuckers need more credit. They put on an all-time classic, and no one gets the credit.
God bless you, sir.
Thank you so much,
all
Craig.
All right, thanks, man.